20-year-old James Alex Fields Jr. of Ohio, the man accused of ramming his car into a crowd of demonstrators during clashes in Charlottesville, Virginia, faces second-degree murder and other charges for allegedly driving the Dodge Charger that killed Heather Heyer on Saturday. In addition to the charges from the crash, the U.S. Justice Department has opened a civil rights investigation. It's not clear if Fields has retained a lawyer or how he intends to plead.
Airbnb's mission has been to bring people together, fostering inclusion, understanding. And so when we became aware that there was going to be a gathering at Airbnb properties this past weekend in Charlottesville by white supremacists, we took action to actually cancel those reservations and ban those users from the platform.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. Those who spread violence in the name of bigotry strike at the very core of America.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's August 15th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Later in this program, we'll talk a little bit about women who give a damn with one of the organizers of 100 Women Who Give a Damn. Caitlin McNeely will be here. We'll also have a conversation in just a minute or so with a reporter from CNN Money, Patrick Gillespie, who's been following what's been happening in Venezuela. All of our attention seems to be focused on North Korea, but Venezuela is possibly having an impact on the global economy, and we'll have a conversation about that in just a minute. But first, why don't we get you up to date on the latest markets from the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Futures are pointing toward another positive open on Wall Street later, with Dow futures up 47, NASDAQ futures are up 13, S&P futures up just about 4. Europe this morning, all of the arrows pointing up. The FTSE's up about a third. So is the DAX and the CAC, all up about 30 points, respectively. In Asia this morning, markets are generally mixed. The Hang Seng is off about a quarter. The Nikkei is up about 1%, 216 points. All the rest of the markets are higher as well. Gold is trading a little bit lower this morning, almost 1% lower. Silver is almost 1.5% lower, and crude oil is at $47.51 a barrel, which is down just about 0.1%. Some news that we're covering since you've been to bed overnight. The chief executives now of three big companies, Intel Corporation, Merck, and Under Armour, have resigned from President Trump's American Manufacturing Council following Trump's initially tepid response to weekend violence in Charlottesville. The latest of those CEOs to walk off that council was the CEO of Intel. Yesterday, you remember that President Trump was highly critical of the first of those defections from Merck, almost immediately criticizing Kenneth Frazier, who's the CEO, saying that he can now, President Trump saying that is, he can now go on to lowering ripoff drug prices. We're also following another story this morning with the Federal Reserve. A top Federal Reserve official has hinted that the Fed will likely announce next month that it'll begin paring its bond portfolio, a step that could lead to slightly higher rates on mortgages and other loans. It was a sit-down interview with the Associated Press. William Dudley, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, says he thinks the Fed has adequately prepared investors for reduction in its portfolio. Target has revealed moves aimed at helping shore up two key areas of its business, groceries and delivery, to boost its grocery business. The company says it's hired executives from rival Walmart and Cheerios maker General Mills. Target's grocery section hasn't been a big draw as it had hoped, and the delivery service hasn't really jumped off either. So they're hoping that these two new hires will help fix that. Well, what's happening in Venezuela? As I mentioned at the top of the program, it seems like all of our attention has been focused on North Korea. But Venezuela owes about $251 million to bond holders. It's engulfed in crisis there. President Trump even recently suggested there might be a military option for dealing with what's going on down there. Thought we'd bring in Patrick Gillespie this morning. He's with CNN Money, and he's been writing about this. Patrick, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
So what is the concern here, Patrick? I know a lot of folks are looking at the bonds Venezuela holds. Is that the main concern globally?
Globally, no. I think globally the concern is what would happen if the United States puts a ban on Venezuelan oil. That would be the most severe action that President Trump could take on Venezuela. And that could cause U.S. gas prices to go up. Obviously, that's not a very good thing to do politically, but it would certainly, I think, choke off the government, the Venezuelan government's only source of cash. Oil exports from Venezuela make up 95% of the government's revenues and exports. So really, Venezuela is a single propeller engine. It's oil, and the only way to kind of stop the government's revenues is to ban oil exports, which make up 5% of all U.S. oil exports, imports, I should say. And Venezuelan oil is the third, Venezuela is the third largest importer of oil to the United States. But I would say in the big picture, Steve, if folks are unfamiliar with what's going on in Venezuela, Venezuela is in a death spiral right now, and that's not a hyperbolic statement. I was in Caracas about 2 weeks ago, and Venezuelans are losing weight due to severe food shortages. Children are dying in hospitals because they don't have proper equipment and medicine, and the economy has been crushed by a self-inflicted wound of government mismanagement, corruption, and extremely harmful price controls. So this is very much an economic and humanitarian crisis going on, and the irony, which is really tragic, is that Venezuela was once Latin America's richest nation. It has more oil reserves than any other country in the world.
CNN has done a wonderful job of covering what's going on down there. I saw a video of one story there. You talked about the humanitarian part of this. Children and their families were chasing after garbage trucks, eating out of garbage trucks, and the amount of hunger there is just—it was just heartbreaking to see. Is that the—is that what world leaders are looking at more than any of this other stuff? Is hey, we have to step in, or may have to step in and help these people?
Well, this is the double-edged sword about President Trump wanting to get tough on Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. So far, the U.S. administration has slapped sanctions on Maduro and other individuals in the Venezuelan government. They've frozen bank accounts that they have in the United States, but they're concerned that if the United States does a ban on Venezuelan oil, that would make it extremely difficult for the Venezuelan government to import food and medicine into the country. Currently, Venezuela doesn't really produce any of its own food. It has to import it all. And, back when oil prices were at $100 a barrel in 2013, 2014, that was somewhat sustainable. Now oil is around the $50 range, and they can't sustain that. I mean, food imports to Venezuela are down 50% from a year ago. So this is a really severe situation. And if you ban Venezuelan oil, then the government has no money to buy food for its people. So it's a very dicey and tricky situation with no smoking gun of an answer.
All right, Patrick, hang on with us. We'll talk more about this as our conversation with Patrick Gillespie continues. He's with CNN Money, and we're talking about Venezuela on the brink.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, advances for the major indexes on Monday. The Dow Jones closing 135 points higher at 21,993. The NASDAQ was up 83 points at 6,340. The Standard & Poor's 500 closed ahead 24.5. President Trump has lashed out at Merck CEO Ken Frazier for quitting the White House Manufacturing Jobs Council. Two more CEOs have since followed Frazier's lead, citing the president's failure to explicitly and quickly condemn the white nationalists who marched in Charlottesville. Target has done some shopping at Walmart, poaching away some of its rivals' executives with expertise in grocery operations. It's one area that Target has been trying to improve its competitiveness. Apple and Aetna are discussing a proposal to bring Apple's fitness tracking smartwatch to millions of Aetna customers. The insurer already offers the watch to its 50,000 employees as part of its corporate wellness program. It may do the same for its members. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:23. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Patrick Gillespie this morning from CNN Money, talking about Venezuela. Patrick, we talked earlier about some of the different options available. It seems the leadership in that country went the opposite direction yesterday with the Venezuelan president actually calling for military exercises after President Trump's threat of a military option. So instead of actually coming to the table, it looks like it's going in the opposite direction.
Yes, I don't see these two sides brokering a deal anytime soon. And I think the consensus is that President Trump's comment that the U.S. could use a military option to go after Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his regime, that comment was very self-defeating. There was a lot of momentum before he made that comment between the U.S. and other Latin American nations such as Mexico, Colombia, Peru, Argentina. There was a lot of consensus building, pressure mounting on the Venezuelan regime to change its ways. And when Trump made that military option comment, a lot of the other Latin American nations had to distance themselves from Trump. That's actually been a really dicey issue for Vice President Mike Pence. He's in Argentina today. He was in Colombia yesterday. He's trying to shore up that consensus, that momentum. But of course, that the idea of a military option from the United States in Latin America is extremely unpopular throughout the region. The U.S. has a very tough history, to say the least, in terms of intervening in Latin American nations. So it does not seem like the U.S. and Venezuela are brokering a deal anytime soon. The Trump administration continues to slap sanctions on Venezuelan government officials. But it's not moving the dial, and Venezuela isn't backing down yet.
And it seems that you mentioned that the vice president was down there getting an earful from Colombia. The leader there saying there's not going to be an there's not going to be a military thing. So take that off the table. Is it? Do you think it's going to be up to those countries to solve this and not us?
Well, I think they're certainly bearing the brunt of this economic and humanitarian crisis. About 2 million Venezuelans have left the country over the last several years as food shortages and medical shortages have gotten worse. And where do they go? They go to Colombia. They go to Argentina. Those are some of the countries that are the easiest for them to go to. In fact, this year, in terms of the United States, Venezuela, a country of 30 million people, Venezuela leads the world in asylum requests to the United States. They are just coming to Miami and other parts of the U.S. In droves. I've spoken to them in multiple places. So those countries are certainly trying their best to resolve this in a diplomatic fashion. They've called the Venezuelan government a dictatorship. They refuse to recognize this new government that took power on July 30th. I think it's going to have to be a coordinated effort between the United States and other Latin American nations. Unfortunately, the options on the menu are not ones that have no risks. They could, a ban on Venezuelan oil could affect ordinary people, but it may be one of the only options to really make change in Venezuela.
Yeah, and aside from describing people running after garbage trucks and being losing weight and being very skinny, that some numbers from this inflation in Venezuela, 720% higher this year, maybe 2,000% next year.
Right.
So that gives you a sense of...
In the United States, we're just trying to get to 2%.
Right, right. So it gives you a sense of just how hard people there are struggling.
Yeah, just to give folks a sense, when I arrived on July 24th in Caracas, Venezuela, the capital city, one U.S. dollar equaled 8,000 bolivars. When I left 10 days later, $1 equaled about 18,000 bolivars. So the inflation changes daily. It is literally a currency spiraling out of control. A bolivar, which is the currency there, a bolivar is worth less than a tenth of a U.S. penny now. So it is truly a worthless currency. You need, I exchanged $20 when I was there, and I received a backpack full of cash.
Wow.
This is like the Weimar Republic in Germany in the 1930s. People are paying for things with stacks of cash. They're weighing the money instead of counting the individual bills.
Well, Patrick, we're going to stay tuned with you and watch your coverage of this. And thank you for being with us here on the Opening Bell this morning.
Thank you so much, Steve. All Have a good day.
Patrick Gillespie is a reporter for CNN Money. You can follow him on Twitter at @Pat_Gillespie, and you can read his work at money.cnn.com.
From ABC News Tech Trends, a consumer alert regarding Microsoft products. When you buy a fancy new electronic device, you expect to be able to use it for at least a few years, right? Well, that's why Consumer Reports has pulled its recommendation of Microsoft Surface laptops and tablets.
We wouldn't recommend that anybody go out and purchase one of these machines right now.
The organization surveyed nearly 91,000 people who bought new laptops and tablets between 2014 and early 2017, finding 1 in 4 users had issues with their Surface devices breaking in the first 2 years. Glenn Doreen with Consumer Reports saying that's much higher than its competitors.
It's always great to have a laptop or a tablet that is, you know, filled with interesting features and is well designed and performs well, but you really need it to last if you can rely upon it. Remember, these are machines that you keep important stuff on, your family photos, your tax records.
In response, Microsoft adamantly defended its devices, writing on its blog, "We stand by the Surface." With Tech Trends, I'm Dave Packer, ABC News.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:39. Glad you're here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. The group is called 100 Women Who Give a Damn, and they're giving away $10,000 pretty soon. We thought we'd talk a little bit about the organization and also how you might be able to win some cash with Caitlin McNeely, who's on with us this morning. She's an organizer for 100 Women Who Give a Damn. Caitlin, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm guessing you're one of those women who give a damn.
I am definitely a woman who gives a damn. I'm proud of it.
Yeah, so what do you mean by that?
So the organization really is geared to, you know, incite some altruism from like-minded women who want to spend, you know, a little bit of time to learn about different organizations, smaller local charities that really can make an impact in your backyard, where they can come together and feel like they're making a real difference in a short amount of time.
We often hear groups like this described as grassroots. Would this qualify as a grassroots group?
This is absolutely a grassroots organization. It started popping up sort of around the country, and I happen to know someone who started it in the Cayman Islands, and then my husband started a local men's chapter right here in Chicago, which was part of my inspiration for getting it going for a women's group.
One of the things that I'm guessing helps an organization like yours come out is that there's a vacuum here, that there's some need that's not being met. Would that be true with 100 Women Who Give a Damn?
Absolutely. We feel like in this, you know, sort of somewhat contentious climate where there's a lot of, you know, negativity out there sort of fueling people, we wanted to give people a platform to do some good and sort of have that moment of get out there and get involved and do something positive and remember that, you know, people are positive and giving and altruistic by nature. So this gives women a new, you know, lease on getting out there and talking with other people in a more positive manner and putting that altruism to work.
And the notion, too, that it doesn't have to be difficult either. It's just as easy as signing up for a group like this. Do you think most people don't join because they think it's going to be difficult? Is that a barrier standing in the way?
Sure. So that's a big part of our message. You know, we talk about how giving back doesn't have to be a black tie gala event. I, for one, have 3 small children at home. I work full time. So adding a new endeavor to my plate would be difficult, but it's something that's important to me. And so that's really the beauty of 100 Women Who Give a Damn. It's a loose organization where we're able to, sort of navigate the charity world a little bit more easily and honestly a little more casually. So we encourage women to bring their friends to this event. We keep it at about 90 minutes on a Monday night to try to make it easier for people to get out. We encourage you to dress casually and just come with a good attitude. You can bring a pen and paper if it suits you, but otherwise all you need to do is show up.
You mentioned some of the alluded to at least some of the things happening in the country and the world right now. In the sense, there's a sense of frustration, I think, among men and women about you know, what can I do to help? What can organizations like yours do? Like, what would you focus on? What are you focusing on? What kinds of help?
Sure. So this is another great thing about it. Anybody who wants to nominate a charity for our event is able to. And so anything that's near and dear to your heart, they have to be a 501c3 organization. They have to operate with a smaller budget so that a $10,000 difference can really, you know, impact a small charity. The recipient charity of our first event was Share Our Spare, and they provide diapers and infant necessities to lower socioeconomic mothers. And so, you know, we were able to make a huge difference in that charity for our first event, and where we had 140 women come together. So we actually exceeded our goal of 100 women and $10,000.
So talk to us a little bit about August 28th, the next charity giveaway.
Absolutely. So on August 28th, we will be meeting at Capri Banquets and Catering. It's located in Countryside, which is in the western suburbs. It starts at 7 p.m. We aim to get everybody out of there by 8:30 to get home. And basically, the charities will come, we'll get everybody seated, and each charity will have 5 minutes to provide a presentation. It's not PowerPoint. It's very casual. They get up there, they'll tell you exactly what they're about. They'll let you know what type of a difference $10,000 will make in their charity. And everybody gets to vote. And then the recipient charity takes home the bulk of the winnings.
It seems simple enough. And I'm guessing you have people knocking down your door to be a part of this.
We do. We have an opportunity for membership. We are looking for people to start RSVPing for our event to hopefully exceed our first event, which again was 140 women. The event is on August 28th, 7 p.m. You can RSVP on our website right on our homepage or under the events tab. Our website is 100womenwhogiveadamn.com.
And the way that the money is generated again is everybody brings $100 and puts it into the pot. Is that
everybody brings a check? So yep. Bring your checkbook and yourself and a friend, and really that's how easy it is. So at the end of the event, we'll all vote, and then everyone makes their $100 checkout to the recipient charity. And if you're so inclined, certainly make a donation to those that are the runners-up. And then that's it.
August 28, again, is the date. The website is 100 Women Who Give a Damn. Caitlin, while I have you on, I mentioned earlier that frustration, that feeling of frustration that a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give folks who may be sitting there this morning thinking, you know, I just feel like I'm not making a difference and things are going in the opposite direction? What would you tell them?
That's a great question. And I think that's, you know, certainly in our current climate, the way that a lot of people feel. I would encourage them to join our organization, start a like-minded organization in their neighborhood. It's not difficult. Find some go-getters to be on your committee and book an event. Get it done. Look into some local charities. Volunteer your time. Make a small donation. These small donations of $100, they make a difference at small charities.
And the like-minded part of that is probably a big part of this as well, because when you have a discussion or conversation with somebody who's a little bit like you and feeling like you, you tend to negate those negative feelings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Get out there, talk to your friends about organizations like this. If you're thinking about starting it, you know, I would encourage you to dive in and get it done. It's so rewarding to make a difference. And, you know, if you have one event, you'll see that the feedback is so positive that you'll want to do another. And now this has spiraled into a 100 Kids Who Give a Darn event that will be coming up in the fall.
Very nice. Well, Caitlin, thank you for giving a damn, and thank you for being with us this morning here on The Opening Bell.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Caitlin McNeely, 100 Women Who Give a Damn is the website.com, and there's a place there where you can register for that event coming up on August 28th, and you can follow them on Twitter as well at 100 Women Who Give.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. The companies naming earnings today or releasing earnings today include Home Depot, which is just out before the bell this morning. Home Depot says quarter two sales rose 6% to $28.1 billion. Shares obviously going up after the good earnings report from Home Depot, up almost a percent and a half. Home Depot has also lifted its full year guidance to $7.29 per share. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 54, NASDAQ futures up about 14. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, we started the week with soybeans and spring wheat cutting losses during the day yesterday, but they still closed lower. Technical selling and outlooks for favorable crop weather continued to put pressure on the prices. And after the close of trade yesterday, USDA said 59% of the soybean crop rated good to excellent. That's down a percentage point from a week ago. Corn crop, on the other hand, rated 62% good to excellent, up 2 percentage points. Pretty much what the trade expected going into yesterday's crop conditions report. Mercantile Exchange live cattle futures fell yesterday. Expectations for lower prices for slaughter-ready cattle this week, ample supplies, and the decline triggered some predetermined sell orders. Funds sold the October contract as well. So it was a down day in the cattle market yesterday at the Mercantile Exchange. But today, it's an up day at the Illinois State Fair. As a matter of fact, I'll get a good look at crops as I fly Air Orion at about 4,500 feet from Huntley down to Springfield for Salute to Ag Day at the Illinois State Fair, and that gets underway at 10 o'clock this morning in the Orr Building with the honoring of many farm families around Illinois. And then the afternoon event at about 4 or 5 o'clock, they'll get underway with the auction of the commodity champions, followed by the auction of the livestock champions. Hope to see you at the fair. I'm going to have a great day. You too. And that's your money on 720 WGN.
All right, Orion, you have a good day as well. And a safe flight down to Springfield. Some other news that we're watching for you this morning. A Wisconsin State Assembly Committee has approved a $3 billion tax incentive package for Taiwan-based Foxconn. The first vote in what could be an intense month of legislative action on the deal. The Republican-controlled Assembly's Jobs and Economy Committee voted 8-5 along party lines to send the bill to the full Assembly, which plans to take it up on Thursday. Republican-authored tweaks were approved that attempt to address some concerns raised by critics that the state is giving away too much to win the $10 billion plant that could employ up to 13,000 workers eventually. But the core of the promise and the proposal remains, including $3 billion in tax breaks for meeting investment and employment targets. Some St. Louis hotels are losing meetings because of a travel advisory issued by the NAACP over concerns about how Missouri law rolls back discrimination protections for workers. This according to a tourism board in St. Louis. But the Kansas City counterpart of the tourism agency known as Explore St. Louis has reported no problems because of the advisory. Explore St. Louis president says that several hotels have told the agency they lost meeting groups and that were in the midst of contract negotiations that were not very positive. The state offered no specifics, including how many hotels and meetings might have been involved. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Tuesday, August 15th. A host of economic reports will be released today, sending more signals about the health of the economy. The Commerce Department kicks off the flurry of announcements with the release of retail sales data for July. Later in the day, Commerce will release an analysis of business inventories for June. Also, the National Association of Home Builders will put out its housing market index for August, and the Treasury Department will release data on international money flows for June. Elsewhere, Home Depot is reporting earnings today, a couple of other companies as well, with their quarterly earnings. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, August 15th.